rivers, and the birthplace of the Bible. In recent years, however, this region has been one of the most volatile and bloody in the Middle East. Over 40,000 people have died in a largely overlooked war in which indigenous Kurds have tried to gain autonomy from Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. In every travel book I read about the region, the author was at least briefly detained. The rough guide I bought actually superimposed a blank area over the region, saying it was too unsafe for its correspondent. In our opinion, travel is emphatically not recommended. In some cases, it said, security forces respond to the rebellion by placing local towns under formal curfew or even shooting up the main streets at random. Though Dou Bayazut was calm today, the underlying tension was still apparent. Approaching the center of town, I had barely made it past a string of cheap jewelry stores when a man approached me eagerly.
"Hello," he said in English.
We shook hands.
"You just drove into the town in that brown car, didn't you? You're staying in the hotel, in room 104.
The secret police are working overtime, I thought.
"What are you doing here?" he asked.
"I'm here to find out about Noah's Ark," I said.
"Noah's Ark?" he repeated. "Well, if you want to learn about the Ark, you have to go to the green building at the end of this street. Go inside and up the stairs until you get to a dark room. Inside there's another set of stairs. Go up those and you'll find another dark room. In there you'll find the man who knows everything about Noah's Ark."
At first I thought he was joking or laying a trap. I thanked him and continued strolling. I had heard enough horror stories and seen enough tanks on the road into town to ignore directions like these. I walked around for a few minutes, bought some plums in the market, and was heading back to the hotel when I stopped myself. Why exactly had I come here anyway? Inside the green building, I found the sagging staircase and proceeded to the second floor. The room was dark and smelled of discarded cigarettes. I hesitated for a minute, took a step forward, then reconsidered. I was just turning back when I heard a noise from above, then steps. Seconds later, a figure appeared. It was a man in his early 40s, lean, with black hair and an enormous bushy mustache that cascaded over his lips. His eyes were concealed by the gloom. He appraised me for a second before saying, in perfect Oxonian English, "May I help you?" "I was told you know about Noah's Ark," I said. He considered my answer. "But you were supposed to go up the second set of stairs." I agreed. "Maybe you don't really want to know." He retreated as quietly as he appeared and left me standing in the dark. This time I didn't hesitate. Upstairs, the man was just settling onto a low chair covered with carpets. He gestured for me to sit next to him. Between us was a table covered with books and a handful of photographs. He poured me a glass of tea and we exchanged niceties. He was a native of Dou Bayazut, a Kurd. 10 years ago he had served time in prison for his role as an insurgent. He refused to talk about the war, and when I asked his name, he gestured toward his mustache.
"Everyone calls me Parachute."
He was wearing a blue and white horizontal striped T-shirt that, along with his dark hair, made him look like a Venetian gondolier. After a while, I asked if it was possible to climb the mountain.
"It is forbidden," he said. "Since 1991, no one has been to the top."
"Is there anything to see?"
"If you believe something, you can see. If you don't believe, you cannot see."
"What do you believe?"
"We believe. When we are children, we hear things. They tell us that this is Noah's countryside. Even today, when something happens, the people say that it's the luck of Noah."
"Do you have the luck of Noah?" I asked.
"We know that something is there. We find something there."
"I'm confused. You're saying that you know something that everybody else does not know?"
"Yes."